Okay, so deep tech, it's like everywhere.
Right.
But sometimes I feel like it's this buzzword that like everyone's using, but no one really knows what it means.
Yeah, definitely. Lots of jargon, lots of hype. We're gonna try to cut through that
We're
today.
doing a deep dig, not just like
Yeah.
a quick skim.
Right.
And we're going deep into this essay from Token Wisdom. It's called Why Everything You Think About Deep Tech Is Right and Wrong.
Yeah.
It's from his A Closer Look series. So yeah, we're gonna unpack all of that.
The essay starts with this great little scene. You know, you've got a quantum physicist, a pharmaceutical researcher, and a material scientist all huddled around a computer screen, just completely
Wait,
lost.
really? So all these experts and they're all like stumped.
Totally. And it's because what they're seeing, it's like data from a quantum computer that's analyzing these molecules, right? And it's showing them possibilities that none of them could have ever imagined on their own.
I see. So it's like the physicist is seeing the quantum stuff, the researcher is seeing the potential for new drugs, and the material scientist is seeing what, like, new ways to arrange atoms.
Exactly.
And they're all like, right. But it's only when you combine all of their perspectives that you get the real breakthrough.
Right. It's the convergence, the combination that unlocks the real power.
Okay, so that kind of leads into this idea of categories, right? We like to put things in boxes, AI, biotech, quantum computing.
Yeah, it's natural.
It helps us like make sense of things, you know?
The essay actually says something like, categorization is how our minds grapple with complexity. But the thing is, those categories can also like limit us, you know?
They can be misleading. And
Exactly.
that's what the essay calls the useful fiction. It's useful, sure, but it's not the whole picture.
Think of it like the periodic table.
Okay,
It's
different.
a framework, it's helpful, but it doesn't capture all the ways that that elements interact to form, you know, compounds.
Compounds, right, which have their own like whole sets of properties. So how does this useful fiction thing, how does it play out in deep tech?
Well, let's take AlphaFold, for example. DeepMind's AlphaFold. Everyone was like, oh, this is a huge AI breakthrough. And it was, but if you just call it AI, you miss the point, you know?
Okay, so what was it then?
The real impact came from combining AI with protein biology and thermodynamic modeling.
So AI was like the tool.
Right, the engine.
Yeah.
But it needed those other disciplines to like guide it. That's how it revolutionized drug discovery.
Okay, so it's that synergy, the convergence that made the real difference.
Exactly. And the essay actually calls these intersections convergent spaces, which I think
Yeah.
is a great way to think about it.
It's kind of like where things get a little bit messy.
Right. Unpredictable.
And that's where the magic happens.
You could say that, yeah. The essay says convergent spaces are where disciplines collide, recombine, and transcend their traditional boundaries.
It's like a whole new world. But I gotta be honest, it's a little overwhelming.
It can be, for sure.
So we have these spaces, these convergent spaces where disciplines are merging and new stuff is happening all the time. But like, how do you measure success in that kind of environment? Do the old metrics even, you know, even apply anymore?
Great question. And even companies like IBM and Intel they're grappling with that.
Yeah.
They're experimenting with new assessment frameworks,
Yeah.
trying to blend metrics from different fields.
They don't really know what to do.
While they're figuring it out as they go along, some aspects of innovation, they defy conventional measurement.
It sounds like we need to completely rethink how we think about innovation.
Absolutely, it's a total paradigm shift. The essay calls it a paradigm shift.
And then there's this idea of innovation cascades.
Oh,
What
yeah.
are those?
They're basically chain reactions. You
Oh.
know, breakthroughs in one field can unexpectedly trigger advances in completely different fields.
Look at domino effect.
Yeah, exactly. Like a domino effect, but for innovation.
Okay, I'm kind of hooked now. What's an example of this in action?
Well, the essay uses the fusion energy revolution as an example. We usually think about fusion in terms of plasma physics, right? But it's so much more than that. Like machine learning, the kind of stuff they use for social media algorithms.
God, really?
Yeah, it's now being used to optimize plasma containment.
Wow, that's wild.
It is.
Huh.
And then there are the advanced materials that are making these new reactor designs possible. Those were made possible by quantum simulations.
So it's like each of these advances, they feed into each other.
Right. And then there's digital twin technology borrowed from manufacturing. It allows for thousands of virtual experiments every day. It's accelerating the pace of discovery.
So without all of these things like coming together, fusion wouldn't be happening as fast as it is.
Exactly. And it's not just fusion. The essay also mentions Boston Metal. They're making carbon-free steel, and their process relies on like electrochemistry, AI, and material science. It's way beyond just traditional metallurgy.
So this is what innovation cascades are. It's like one thing leads to another, and it just keeps building.
That's it.
And it's happening like everywhere.
It is. And then there's this this even crazier idea, meta innovation.
Okay, that sounds like we're getting really really deep here. What is meta innovation?
It's not just finding solutions faster.
It's not.
It's about inventing entirely new ways of innovating.
Oh wow. Okay.
Like shifting from finding answers to creating whole new sets of questions.
So instead of just like making a new product or a new process, we're innovating the way we innovate.
That's exactly it. Think about pharmaceutical companies. They're using AI, quantum computing, and genomics to not just find drugs faster, but to find entirely new ways of finding drugs.
Well, that's meta, no pun intended.
Yeah.
It's like the boundaries are disappearing.
They are. And what's even more exciting is that all of this, it's not just happening in like these elite labs. It's becoming democratized.
Okay, democratized deep tech. That's a new one. What does that even mean?
Well, the essay talks about things like cloud computing, desktop DNA synthesizers, and open source AI models. These tools, they used to be only available to these like really well-funded labs. Now they're accessible to, you know, a much wider range of people.
So anyone can like tinker with this stuff.
Pretty much, yeah.
That's incredible.
It is. It's like giving everyone a powerful telescope
to explore the universe.
Exactly. The essay says, as barriers to entry fall, new forms of distributed innovation are emerging, transcending traditional institutional and disciplinary boundaries.
But I mean, there's got to be downsides to this, right? It can't just be like handing everyone a supercomputer and saying go nuts.
Yeah, of course. These tools are complicated. There are security risks. The cost of failure can be really high. And the infrastructure, it's not evenly distributed. And then, of course, just having the tools doesn't mean you know how to use them.
Right, right. So it's like giving everyone a spaceship, but no flight manual.
Exactly. And the essay calls this the capability gap. And it highlights organizations like the IGM Foundation, which are trying to bridge that gap. They're providing standardized protocols and training programs. But to really solve this problem, we need a fundamental shift in our approach to education, support systems, you know, a whole new way of thinking.
So it's exciting, but also like a little bit scary.
It is.
We're in this transition phase. We have all this amazing potential, but we're still figuring out, you know, how to use it responsibly.
And the essay makes a point of saying that it's not just on scientists and engineers to figure this out. It's on all of us.
So we all have a role to play. Okay, so that's a lot to digest. We've talked about the definition of deep tech, convergent spaces, innovation cascades, and even meta innovation.
It's a lot, yeah.
But we've only just scratched the surface. So stay tuned for part two of our deep dig into why everything you think about deep tech is right and wrong, where we're going to explore what all of this means for the future of innovation.
And for all of us, welcome back to our deep dig. So we've been talking about deep tech being this new way of thinking about innovation.
Right. All about convergence and those unexpected connections.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, it's easy to talk about these concepts. Yeah. The real question is, like, how do we actually put them into practice? How do we make this new paradigm a reality?
Okay. So how do we do that?
Well, the essay goes back to that scene in the Boston lab, remember, with the physicist, the researcher, and the material scientist.
Yeah, yeah.
But this time, it's framing them as like pioneers of this new model of innovation. They represent this shift from like isolated expertise to this more fluid, collaborative way of working.
So it's not just about those three people. It's about changing the whole system, right? Like how we approach research and development.
Exactly. The essay talks about needing a systemic shift in education, funding, and organizational structures.
Big changes.
Yeah.
Okay, so what would that look like? Like, give me some concrete examples.
Okay, so the essay mentions the Broad Institute, you know, the MIT Harvard Broad Institute.
Yeah.
They've actually broken down departmental barriers. Researchers can, like, pursue problems wherever they lead, regardless of their discipline.
So it's not about forcing a problem into a category. It's about letting the problem like dictate the approach.
Right. It's about letting research flow freely across those those artificial boundaries. Okay. And it's not just about breaking down barriers within institutions. It's about embracing diverse perspectives. Like the essay talks about DeepMind.
DeepMind, the AI company.
Yeah. They actually employ philosophers alongside their computer scientists.
Philosophers? Well, really?
Yeah.
That's interesting. I guess even AI needs to think about the big questions, right?
Well, it's more about understanding the ethical implications of these technologies, their impact on society.
Makes sense. As these technologies get more powerful, we need to think about the consequences, not just the capabilities.
Right, exactly.
It makes you wonder if our education system is even, like, keeping up with all of this.
Yeah, that's a good point. The essay doesn't really offer any solutions, but it does emphasize the need for, you know, for educational models that foster cross-disciplinary thinking, problem-solving, collaboration.
Skills for the future.
Right.
Okay, but all this collaboration sounds great, but, you know, research needs funding.
Oh, absolutely. And that's another big challenge.
It is.
Yeah, because traditional funding mechanisms, they tend to favor, you know, well-defined projects within established disciplines. Mm-hmm. And convergence research, it's messy, it's unpredictable, and it doesn't always fit neatly into those existing categories.
So those researchers we talked about earlier, the ones working on machine learning and material science back in 2015, they probably had a hard time getting funding, right?
Exactly. Their work was too interdisciplinary. And, you know, now it's seen as groundbreaking, but the essay does mention some investment firms that are trying to do things differently, like Prime Movers Lab. They're pioneering new funding models that embrace longer timelines and the interdisciplinarity of convergence research.
So there are investors out there who are willing to, like, take a risk on this new way of doing things.
Yeah. They understand that these really big innovations, they often take time, and they're willing to support research that might not have, like, immediate commercial applications.
It's about having a vision, right?
Exactly.
And trusting the process, even if the path isn't always clear.
And it highlights this need to rethink how we view risk and reward. Imagine all the breakthroughs that never happened because the funding models were too rigid.
It's like the greatest danger is not aiming too high and missing, but aiming too low and hitting.
Right.
Exactly. We need to be bolder.
Yeah, and we need to support the people who are pushing the boundaries.
Absolutely. And the essay also talks about organizational structures. We need to create environments that foster, like, those serendipitous connections that spark innovation.
Like those water cooler moments.
Yeah, exactly. But it's not just about leaving things to chance. It's about designing spaces and cultures that encourage collaboration, the free flow of information, the mixing of different perspectives.
So less hierarchy, more organic interactions.
Right. Think about those big research institutions where, you know, departments are siloed, researchers rarely interact, knowledge gets trapped. It's like having all the ingredients for an amazing meal, but keeping them locked in separate rooms. We got to get those shifts together.
Exactly. This essay says, innovation thrives in environments where ideas can collide and recombine freely, where the boundaries between disciplines are porous, and where serendipity is not just welcomed, but actively cultivated.
Okay, this is all very inspiring, but I'm wondering, like, what does this mean for, you know, for the average person, for someone who's not a scientist or an investor?
Well, the essay makes it clear that this revolution, it's not just happening in labs and boardrooms, it's going to impact all of us.
So even if we're not, like, directly involved in developing this technology, we're still going to be affected by it.
Exactly. It's like the internet. Most of us don't understand how it works, but it's transformed our lives.
Okay, so what do we do?
The essay says we need to be aware of these changes. We need to be ready to adapt, and we need to be, you know, active participants in shaping the future.
It's not just about passively consuming these technologies. It's about understanding them, thinking critically about them, and making sure they're used for good.
The future of deep tech is not preordained, the essay says. It will be shaped by the choices we make, the questions we ask, and the values we prioritize.
That's a lot of responsibility.
Yeah.
But how do we even begin to make those choices when, like, the world is changing so fast? How do we even keep up?
That's where the essay offers some hope. It says that while the technologies themselves are, you know, they're complex, the underlying principles are actually, they're pretty simple.
So there's, like, a framework we can use to make sense of all this.
Yeah. The essay breaks it down into three key forces: exponential technologies, democratized access, and a fundamental shift in mindset.
Okay, so we've covered a lot of ground. The what and the how of deep tech, blurring lines, new ways of thinking, tons of potential. But where does all this lead? Like, what does it actually mean for the future for all of us?
That's where the essay brings us back to that that central question. Is our understanding of deep tech right or wrong?
Yeah, it feels like we've been dancing around that idea this whole time. We see the potential, the paradigm shifts, but it's still hard to like wrap our heads around it.
And that's the thing, right? The essay says the answer is it's both. We're right in seeing how powerful these technologies are, but we're wrong if we try to like put them in a box.
So it's not about being right or wrong. It's about embracing the paradox.
Exactly. Recognizing the limits of how we think now, but being open to new ways of seeing things.
Okay, I like that.
The essay actually puts it like this. Deep tech defies easy categorization. It is a tapestry woven from threads of scientific discovery, technological innovation, and philosophical inquiry. To grasp its true essence, we must abandon our preconceived notions and embrace the inherent ambiguity.
Wow, that's pretty deep. So yeah. So it's about those spaces in between where things collide and new ideas emerge.
Yeah, it's about being comfortable with the unknown, venturing into new territory.
Which can be scary. So the essay basically leaves us kind of on the edge of the unknown. Feeling excited, but maybe a little unsure.
Yeah, it doesn't give easy answers, but it invites us to be a part of this exploration, this deep tech revolution.
A revolution that's changing, like, everything.
Exactly.
So it's a call to action, then, for everyone to be curious, to be open to new ideas, to challenge the status quo.
Absolutely. The essay says, the most profound innovations rarely emerge from linear, predictable trajectories. They arise from the unexpected collisions of ideas, from the fertile ground where disciplines intersect, and from the courage to venture beyond the familiar.
So it's about creating the conditions for innovation to happen, bringing different people and ideas together, letting them like bounce off each other.
Yeah, fostering that cross-pollination.
It's a reminder that innovation, it's not just about technology. It's a human thing. It's about curiosity and solving problems and building a better future.
And as the essay wraps up, courtesy of your friendly neighborhood, Khayyam, the future of deep tech is not a destination, but a journey, a continuous exploration of the unknown, a testament to the boundless potential of human ingenuity.
It's a journey we're all on together. Well, that's about it for our deep dig into why everything you think about deep tech is right and wrong. Hopefully this has given you some new things to think about, a new way to look at this amazing world of deep tech. Keep exploring, keep asking questions, and most importantly, keep innovating.